Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, August 16th, 2000. In the Koinonia Fireside Room this evening are Bob and Gracie Ekblad, Jorge Calix, Hector Giron, Jorge Mejia and Miguel Castro. Today's session number is 2000-3 and it's titled Poverty, Oppression and Liberation, South and North, Campesino and Farmwork Perspectives on Liberation, Liberation and Change in Central America, Confronting Poverty Through Sustainable Agriculture, Preventative Health and Bible Study. Let's listen in.
Did that get unplugged or did someone just turn it off? Or?
The fan's running.
Oh, here we go. All right, you can go ahead and roll the tape. Today we're doing our third session, and we'll be looking at promoting liberation and change in Central America through preventative health education, sustainable agricultural development, and scripture study. And what I want to do is sort of present to you the work of Tierra Nueva, and these four men are representatives of Tierra Nueva in Honduras. This is a ministry that my wife Gracie and I founded along with a Honduran peasant named Fernando Andrade, a Guatemalan Indian woman. We worked, started a model farm and began this ministry in 1981. And since 1988, it's been in the hands of a group of 15 or 20 agricultural promoters and health workers. Four of them are here today. And they have an independent Honduran development agency called Tierra Nueva. And my wife Gracie and I continue to visit that program every year. Anyway, I'm going to go through and give you just a very quick. How many of you were here for our first session? Can you raise your hand? Okay, I'm going to go through the first few slides really quickly just to give the rest of you who haven't been here before a little bit more of the context. For those of you who aren't aware of where Honduras is, it's right between, right in the heart of Central America with the border on the east, Guatemala, and then the south, El Salvador, and on the southwest, Nicaragua. And it's right on the Caribbean, and it also has a port on the Pacific. Our particular village where we worked is called Minas de Oro. It's right here. And all four of these men are from this region of Minas de Oro, right in the center of the country. Most of the Honduran people are poor subsistence farmers, although that's rapidly changing as many people head off for the cities to find a better life, since it's so difficult to sustain themselves on the land. Most people have to collect firewood and use wood-burning stoves, which is a very labor-intensive job that pretty much every family has to do every day. Most people have no running water, so they have to do all their washing and bathing in creeks and rivers. Most people, can we turn the lights off, actually? Most people are farmers, and if they have land, they have to sustain themselves off that land. See, there's one more light. Yeah. If you could do the closes up above, that'd be great too.
Bob, can you just real quickly hit back to the first two slides for us, really quick? Let's see. Standpoint's clicking from the
So anyway, most of the people are subsistence farmers, which means whatever piece of land they have, they live off whatever they can get off that land. And of course, few people can survive off the minimal amount of lands that they have. And that's in part because this is the traditional farming practice of slash and burn is a practice that no longer really works. And there hasn't been a new approach that's been presented to the people that's been adopted by the people. Slash and burn involves going in and cutting all the brush, and then and this is usually on very steep land that is not even suitable for agriculture in the first place. It should be forested land.
A person right there farming.
And it's land that is impoverished already. Anyway, once the land has been cut of its brush, all the brush is cut, people set fire to it. And so all the organic matter goes up in smoke. And there's no contour system, or, you know, a conservation soil and water system that most farmers use. So when the rains come, there's tremendous problem of erosion, and the land gets washed away. So anyway, the results are poor yields of the basic grain crops that are the staple crops for the Honduran poor, which are corn, number one, and then beans and rice. When I first asked people why they thought their agriculture was getting worse, most would tell me, you know, we don't know. Government workers have come and they've taught us this or that. They've introduced new seed varieties or fertilizer, but all we know is that it's getting worse, and it must be the will of God, you know. And other people wouldn't even explain that much. They'd just say, "Es la voluntad de Dios." And so that was something that struck us right from the beginning, and in terms of the negative theology that we described yesterday.
So it's just the will of God.
It's the will of God. Most people have to take their kids out of school at a young age. You know, all of these men, with the exception of Miguel, haven't made it past third grade, and that's very typical in Honduras. But lots of kids never even have one day of school in their lives. Like Jorge here, he's never attended a day of school in his life. And that's because, like this boy, he wasn't even pulled out of school. He was never put into school. He was needed as a wage earner for the family. The result is a tremendous amount of frustration and discouragement, and sometimes apathy. A lot of the men, there's a lot of vices that people turn to. Anyway, this is the card game, which is a very common pastime for a lot of Honduran men. A lot of gambling takes place, and there's a lot of alcoholism. So that's a problem all over the world. But in Honduras, with the scarce resources, the problem is felt more by families. So a lot of people take off to the capital city hoping to find work, but unemployment is about 50% in the capital, 50% of the people. So they have to, you know, it's much more of a struggle. The capital cities of Latin America are just overcrowded and a lot of crime, you know, because people aren't able to survive and there aren't jobs. Kids are taken out of school and put to work on the streets, or they join gangs of young people that, you know, that rob and you know, do whatever they can to make a living, sell drugs. And then recently there was a big hurricane that swept through Central America that you all heard about, I'm sure, Hurricane Mitch. I was down there several weeks after the hurricane. And you know, you'd think that the country was already just struggling and barely surviving. Of course, many people weren't surviving. When this hurricane hit, it was just a tremendous blow to the country. This is the center of the city, and people you could barely walk across this bridge because of the smell. The stench was so bad. They figured there were several thousand bodies buried in the mud underneath that bridge.
I might add that one of the main reasons why it was so devastating was because there were houses that were built alongside of the river where there shouldn't ever have been buildings.
We had a center right here in this house. This was a house this high. We had a two-story house that we used to help market goods in the market, which is right behind these houses, and it was completely wiped out. And of course, about 75% of the infrastructure, bridges and such, were wiped out. Many people who were already beaten down and impoverished were just beaten down, ground into the dirt even more. This man, I asked how he was doing. I'd known him for the last 18 years. I've seen him on the streets, and he said, "Oh, my mother and all of my brothers were killed because our village was completely swept away." There were a number of villages in the south of Honduras that were completely swept away by torrential, you know, by rivers. And then many people lost their crops. This is a village, an agricultural committee called New Life, which Hector Giron, the promoter at far end here, visits on a weekly basis. And they had all their land. This is their 6 feet of sand that was left on top of their corn. It wiped out their whole plot, which we'd helped them purchase. These were all landless farmers, about 12 farmers, that for the last 10 years they've been subsisting off the land, and now they can't use this land anymore. And the lack of basic grains after that hurricane was just a major crisis. And even more of a crisis happened when international aid sent too much basic grains in response. And that really hurt a lot of the farmers because the prices of basic grains went down so low that those that produced weren't even able to sell. They could hardly even give away their corn beans. Now, we began our ministry. We were fortunate enough to meet a Honduran development maverick named Elias Sanchez, who had a demonstration farm on the outside of Tegucigalpa, the capital. And he recruited us, even though we knew nothing about agriculture. he said, listen, you know, we need, and if you want to direct, if you want to fight against poverty and in Latin America, you know, don't work and don't do health work and don't work with refugees. We need you to help increase production. And Gracie and I, you know, I had a history major. I was a history major and Gracie was a literature major. So we thought, well, how are we going to do that? You know, we had no background in agriculture. And the man said, no problem. We will find you a Honduran peasant who's a master organic intensive farmer. And he can be your teacher. But we had many savvy missionaries tell us, you know, don't do what we did. You know, we went to Cornell and got a PhD in agriculture, and then we came down here and tried to apply it to Guatemala or Honduras, and everything we learned, most of it was useless, because this is a different context. You know, learn from the people. Find some people that are doing it right and learn from them. So we just, Gracie and I were ready for that sort of an opportunity, and we just jumped at it. And we were put out in this little village called Minas de Oro, and first of all, we went and bought all the things we needed for farming. We didn't know what we needed. We didn't know anything about farming. But we were taken out by Elias and Fernando, our co-worker. We bought pick, shovel, seeds, and, you know, and all the different things. And we went out, and our objective was to live as simply as we could and as close to the way the people live, but introduce these new methods, which I'm going to tell you about as we move through.
That's a big corn stand there in the corner.
That's a big corn stand, and that was our second house. This was a farm called La Marihuana, the marijuana. Mm-hmm. So we were los gringuitos de la marihuana. Yeah, it was a beautiful place. And that's why it got the name, because the guy that owned it before said that he felt like he was so relaxed after he left this farm that he felt like he'd been smoking marijuana. So anyway, we had a demonstration farm, and Fernando was our teacher. In the beginning, he didn't want to teach us anything because he said, you guys know everything. I don't know anything. But we had to convince him through, you know, soon he was able to see that we really didn't know anything. So he began to really take charge of our farm. And, of course, I'd never done any farming. I had to learn how to use a machete and a pick and, you know, how to use a hoe and all these things, and how to buy a good horse. We ended up buying horses instead of having motorized vehicles.
Built some big calluses, I bet.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Rode a lot of hoes, too.
So we lived, you know, pretty as close to the way the people lived as we could, but it was really hard for us because we were used to all the luxuries of North America, right? This is our plot, which is, let's see if I can get it. Oops. Kind of out of focus, but that's a torrential downpour. And this is from our deck of our house, and people would often get stuck in our house when the rains came, and we'd sit around and drink coffee, and we'd look out, and we could show people. We could see, look, the reason we've done terraces is so that when it rains, the rain will not erode the soil, but will stay in the rows. This system is a system of terracing where you have ditches, drainage ditches here, and a pasture grass barrier that retains the soil, all the soil, and then all the rows are to the curve of the land. And we didn't burn, which is the traditional approach is to burn. Instead of burning, we incorporated all the organic matter and made big compost piles, and then planted our crops with proper spacing.
So did you slash it all from machete? What did you do with the wood? Was there wood there before?
There wasn't wood in this particular plot, it was just a field. But normally the wood you would use, you put along the edges of the contour and it would rot there. You could use it like as what we call a barrera muerta, dead barrier, instead of grass, pasture grass barrier. Anyway, our results of our beans and corn were so incredible that, I mean, I was the first person to be shocked. Because we'd hear people walking by on the road of our first farm. This is our second farm, but our first farm was more of a demonstration plot than this. People would say, oh, those stupid gringos. Don't they know that this is the worst piece of land in our area? You know, they're not going to get anything from this plot. And I kind of wondered, you know, myself. It was, the grass was pretty yellow. I mean, the grass that was growing up, the weeds were yellow, right? But anyway, we used these methods, and Fernando was able to help us get just incredible yields of corn and beans. For every, the average farmer in Honduras will plant 8 pounds of beans and harvest maybe, ¿cuánto de una medida? ¿Cuánto se saca de una medida el sistema tradicional?
El sistema tradicional, si la tierra no está muerta del todo, se puede sacar, digamos, 8 quintales, 6 quintales,
6 quintales de una medida.
De una medida. Pero si está bien, bien mal la tierra, pues quizás 3.
Yeah. Sí. So maybe like 300 pounds from 8 pounds of seed when the land is pretty bad, which most of the time it is. And from in our harvest, we were able to get 100 pounds for every pound of seed that we planted. In our second year, we were able to get 200 pounds for every pound of seed. So anyway, the results were that people began to come and visit us, and they'd say, how did you do this? You know, where did you get this seed? And we said, we used the same seed you used. And so we were able to, a few people wanted to learn, and we said, we'll start a course. So we started a course called Appropriate Technology for the Use and Management of Steeply Inclined Land. Tecnología apropiada para el uso y manejo de tierra en madera, ¿verdad? So that happened under a mango tree. We had 12 people that signed up. And then our objective was to help kind of disciple them in organic, like intensive hillside farming. And from the time of planting to the time of harvest. So we worked really hard to visit the farmers, and we had a theoretical part of the class, because our first group was mostly literate people from the village. But afterwards, we always had a theoretical part because we wanted to promote that as much as possible, literacy among the people. But mainly, we got out with picks and shovels, and we dug contour ditches, which is the basic foundation for this system of terracing. And these contour ditches were to the curve of the land, and we would plant a pasture grass barrier above the ditch so that when the rains would come washing the soil down, it would stop at the pasture grass barrier. Now this man, he wasn't able to harvest anything off this plot. And the next picture is 3 months later after he did these changes.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
So he was able to get the same sort of results we were. So anyway, this led to just a tremendous amount of interest among the community for these methods. So the second year, we had over 200 families that signed up for the course, and we began training agricultural promoters among the first people that were really showing signs of success and interest in teaching.
This is beans,
right? Beans, those are beans. So once the land is protected, you can sink the plow in. You know, and you can cultivate the soil much more fully. And then we introduced a cover crop, which was called velvet bean. We call it velvet bean. It was a bean that you could plant in the middle of the corn. This is Jorge Calis, I think about 15 years ago. Hace como 15 años, ¿verdad, Jorge? So anyway, this particular variety of bean is a nitrogen-fixing variety like all beans are, but it produces a huge amount of foliage. And so all of that gets turned into the soil and turns the whole plot into a giant compost pile after, you know, after you've harvested the corn out of there, you can just chop everything up and turn it under. So the results of this sort of this method, these methods allowed people like Jorge, you know, to completely just get bumper crops off of land that he was ready to abandon.
That's Jorge again.
Jorge, no sé si usted puede decir algo de cómo, qué tipo de resultados tenía de este lote antes y qué tipo de resultados tenía después.
Sí, antes.
I'm asking him what kind of results he had in this land before and then after.
Bueno, cuando llegamos a esa tierra, pues la tierra que no la habíamos cultivado, pues estaba un poco fértil.
When we first got to this land, it hadn't been cultivated, so it was pretty fertile.
Se cultivó 12 años.
We cultivated it 12 years.
Sin control, sin conservación.
Without using any kind of means of controlling erosion.
A los 12 años no servía para nada.
And after 12 years, it didn't serve for anything. It was useless.
No se pegaban ni monte nacía.
There wasn't even a weed that grew there.
De ahí pues aprendimos nosotros.
After that we learned
a conservar el suelo,
to conserve the soil,
aprovechar el agua,
to take it to conserve the water,
en su debida forma,
and to use all of the resources in their proper way.
Porque antes de ese tiempo nosotros quemábamos la basura.
Because after this, after we learned these methods, we burned all the garbage, all the all the weeds.
Y otra parte la tirábamos a la quebrada.
And then everything else we threw it away into the creek.
Pero de ahí para acá, pues, se nos quitó una venda de los ojos.
But after, it was like a veil was taken away from our eyes.
Y conocimos la manera de cambiar.
And we learned the way to change.
Y a los tres años tenía en esa época de haber aprendido la conservación.
And this was after 3 years of learning these new methods.
Y en tres años,
I had this result.
Todo era diferente.
And everything changed.
Había 10 veces más producción.
I had 10 times more production.
Ese de abajo tal vez ellos no saben que es arroz, ¿no?
Maybe you don't know, but what's below there is rice.
Sí, ese mi arrozal. Ahí tengo el maíz y más arriba tengo los frijoles.
And I have corn there behind me, and then above I have beans.
Sí, de allí cosecho toda mi comida.
And from there I harvest all
y
my
me sobra
food. And everything that's left over.
Para ayudar a los demás.
I help other people. So. And usted estaba a punto de salir para Tegucigalpa, ¿verdad?
No sabía qué hacer.
He said, yeah, I didn't know what. I said, are you were about ready to leave for the capital city? And he said, yes, I didn't know what else to do.
Si irme para la ciudad o irme para el norte.
I didn't know whether to go to the city or go to up here to the north. So anyway, these methods also led to a transformation in people's thinking, because see, before people would say there was a attitude of resignation and a feeling like it's God's will. You know, I mean, it's God's will that we're poor. But suddenly people were able to see, look, it's not God's will that we're poor. Our land is eroded. You know, and the erosion is one of our problems, and ignorance of knowing how to control erosion is one of the reasons. You know, and the fact that we haven't learned how to plant to the curve of the land and to conserve the soil and to use compost and to not burn. And so suddenly God was off the hook. You know, there was a new possibility for sort of thinking about who God was, who God is, you know. And this is the place of social analysis in a liberation, in liberation theology. One of the real benefits or contributions of liberation theology was these priests that would come in, and you know, Protestant ministers also would come in, and they would teach people how to think critically, cause and effect, you know, understand some of the roots of poverty, you know, because before people would tend to anything they didn't understand they'd attribute to God. So this happened in this case.
Ahí hay algo importante que a mí no se me olvida.
Here there's something important that I never will forget.
Cuando Don Roberto fue ahí, sacó un metro. Y se pegó dio una herida en el dedo y botó mucha sangre. ¿Se acuerda usted?
No.
Yo sí me acuerdo.
He says he remembers when I was right there with this man that I pulled out a tape measure and I cut my finger and I was bleeding a lot. This man had lots of children. I think he had three different wives and many different kids, and so he was really happy to be able to produce more corn and beans.
Do they have large families to provide more children to do more work to support, or is that what the culture does?
I'm not sure, but that's the main reason. I don't think there's any real thought out reason for having lots of kids. But I just think, I mean, that could be in part. Yeah, we can ask them.
Ask them.
¿Por qué ustedes creen que la gente tiene tantos niños? ¿Es porque necesita ayudantes o es porque le gusta tener muchos niños o por qué razón?
No, esa es parte de ignorancia.
It's partly from ignorance.
Y hay gente que no cree, o sea, piensa que es malo.
And there are people that think it's wrong to use birth control.
Que es pecado evitar los hijos.
It's a sin to avoid children, having children.
Y otra forma es que no tienen televisión para divertirse.
And also they don't have television to be able to. And another thing that is very common, Jorge says, is that it's the will of God. Okay. It's a resignation to whatever happens. Okay. So anyway, this particular, when people are able to have success on their land, it just brings a tremendous amount of dignity and self-respect. This is the thing that I saw that was most transformational in people's lives. You know, when you're a peasant, you're a farmer, and you're not able to produce anything, and the rich landlords and all the professionals and the media, they're all saying, oh, the peasants are stupid and lazy. And if they would just get their butts in gear and work and stop being so lazy and drinking and all the problems that they've caused, and, you know, these lazy people, you know, things would change. And, you know, when we first met people, we'd say, well, you know, what's your profession? And they'd say, well, I'm yo soy un pobre campesino. I'm a poor peasant. That's what they'd say. And they'd hang their head. you know, there was a real feeling of being a peasant, being a campesino was just being a nothing. Okay, so when people were able to get these incredible yields, see, we'd organize these agricultural committees and we'd go around and do a field-to-field visits, you know, tours, where people could show what they'd done to their whole community, right? I mean, to all the other farmers. And there was an incredible sense of pride and dignity and self-respect that came with that. And people were able to go and reclaim land that had been abandoned as useless land. This particular piece of land had been abandoned years before for the same reason that Jorge was ready to leave his land, because the land was just exhausted. And now with these methods, people were able to go and do what, this is minimum tillage, where you just, we bought picks that were like 4 inches wide and 12 inches deep, and had a system of picking just the row to the curve of the land, and everything in between was left uncultivated. And then we had these little tacos, they call them, these little machetes that were kind of curved like a scythe that people would use to cut the grass rather than taking the grass out, right? So you had minimum amount of erosion that way and maximum amount of conservation of water. And then you only needed to compost the actual row that you were cultivating. So anyway, these systems allowed people who were really on the brink of disaster, I mean, who were ready to leave, a way to subsist for the first time. And the results were increased harvests, you know, corn, beans, and rice. So one of the things that we did, this is David Caliz, who was here last year, and Jorge, who's right to my right. This is a cooperative that is run by Tierra Nueva, by the promoters in Honduras. And yo no sé si ustedes quieren decir algo sobre la cooperativa. El objetivo de la cooperativa.
Sí, la cooperativa fue creada con el propósito de conservar granos.
The cooperative was established with the objective of conserving, keeping grain.
Y sacarlo en tiempos cuando hay escasez.
And take it out and sell it when there were times of scarcity.
Y así evitar de que la gente que trata de explotar a los pobres.
This was a way to avoid letting people exploit the poor.
La cooperativa da más, un precio más bajo.
The cooperative gave a lower price.
Al alcance de toda la gente
that
pobre.
Was possible for all the poor people to be able to purchase.
Hasta el momento hemos tenido muy buen éxito.
And
gracias a Dios.
Good success up to this point.
So they regulate supply and demand by
what they do is they wait until the rich open their silos at a high price. They don't sell until the rich people start to wait for, you know, speculate. And then when the prices are they're selling it for the highest amount of money, then they open all their grain stock silos and sell it for much less. And that forces all the rich people to either shut their silos down or sell it for less. And then as soon as the rich start selling it for less, they close their silos down. You know, and they play this game, yeah, with the rich. It's crazy.
Well, at the same time, I started my commute process here. I'm commuting to work, visiting the women at the same time that Bob was visiting the men. And our work down there is kind of segregated because women don't normally work with men. And so I would visit the wives. And the idea was to try to, you can move the picture. I don't like this picture so much. The idea was to go directly to the homes and just get to know some of these women and invite them to some group meetings that we would have. A lot of them consisted of nutrition and just to get women to learn how to use some of the new grains that a lot of the guys were planting, like soybeans was one of the main significant crops that we introduced. And just teaching about how to make everything with soybeans. And now, 15 years later, the women are still using soybeans, and this has made a significant difference in their diet and their nutrition. Other things were family planning, just basic first aid, and also teaching how to plant certain basic vegetables that had never been tried, and then how to make things with these vegetables, like carrots, and just some of the basic things we would all think are normal parts of our diet, but a lot of people, that was one of the main things that was missing were vegetables.
Grace, could you say a little more specifically about family planning, what sort of teaching you did and how that
was? Well, that is kind of a delicate issue because, you know, socially, like Jorge was saying, it was somewhat frowned upon, well, not somewhat, it was frowned upon by and large, especially by the Catholic Church, you know. It was seen as going against God's will, and I didn't want to get in trouble, you know, right in the beginning before I even knew these people. So family planning was one of the issues that we talked about, you know, after several years of being there, and only with women that we knew pretty well. Does that answer your question? Okay.
This is a picture of a community. In the beginning, the men often wouldn't let their wives go to meetings with Gracie until the men were sort of convinced. And so we had to begin with men in a lot of cases. And then when the men were convinced, then Gracie was able to have much more success. And we got to the point where whole villages would invite us to give courses, these week-long courses called How to Care for Your Pueblo, Your People.
Some of the other things we did were to teach how to make just some basic remedies like cough syrup and some medicines against skin parasites and so forth.
This particular picture is in the village where we're teaching people how to make soy milk, which was something that really caught on and people were quite excited about. And we would also make soy bread. And we had it calculated in such a way that I'd be out with the men teaching how to plant soy. And then we'd come back, and right when the bread was coming out of the oven, right? So the women would present the bread to all the men, and we'd, pretty, you know, pretty patriarchal, macho kind of thing to do, whatever, to expect. But anyway, this system worked well, because the men were able to taste and see for themselves. And, you know, that was, and once they were able to taste, we'd add lots of sugar to the bread and make sure that it was really good. And then afterwards, we'd talk about the, you know, the negative effects of sugar after they were already hooked on soybeans. So what really led to the change was just basic, I mean, the gospel really that we were presenting was the gospel of corn and beans. You know, increasing production of corn and beans, because that's where the most urgent needs were that they felt. They needed to increase their production, because without corn, there's no way to feed your family, no way to feed your animals. You know, you're dead in the water. And of course, without beans, if you have to buy your beans, most of the people in our area were buying their beans because there was a fungus problem that was wiping out all the bean fields. And the soil was so weak that was part of the reason why the fungus was so successful.
This is Jorge's house, right?
This is Jorge's house, yeah. ¿Verdad, Jorge? Es su familia.
Es mi familia, una parte, y la de mi hermano David.
Yeah, this is my family in part, and my brother David.
La de azul y la de amarillo son mis hijas.
The yellow and the blue are his
this,
daughters.
¿Ella? ¿Es su hija?
No, la otra.
No, esta. Okay, this one and this one.
Y esta, ¿verdad?
Ahora son más grandes.
Sí, son más grandes.
So anyway, this gospel of corn and beans, this is what grabbed everyone's attention. So after our second year, I said we had about 200 families. After our third year, we had about 500. And at the end of our fourth year, we had 1,000 families that had received the training. We had trained a group of 35 agricultural promoters and health workers. And at that point, our whole objective was to increasingly turn over all the teaching to the Honduran promoters. They were much more effective at being able to communicate. And the rule was you had to do it first yourself, hacer lo uno primero. And the second rule was that you had to be willing to teach, you know, what you learned. You know, but you never taught without practicing it yourself. And so the whole model of this was that promoters would visit, you know, maybe 2 days a week at the most they'd be out visiting communities, but most of their time was spent maintaining their own farms as kind of constantly evolving model farms in their own communities.
I was going to talk about this guy. Before, he was a chicken thief and stole other things too, and a lot of it was because he didn't have his own piece of land and so wasn't able to produce enough to make ends meet. And then we helped him to try to acquire some land, and things changed for him in that way. That's one of the basic problems is people. A lot of people don't even have enough land just to make a go of things.
Huh? Well, it's pretty successful, that picture.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Gracie, we worked to train women promoters, and this was much more difficult actually to train women promoters. Because oftentimes they were pregnant, and you know, that would make it harder for them to travel the long distances that people would need to travel on foot to the villages. Yo no sé por qué razones hay para
es difícil encontrar mujeres que están dispuestas y libres para poder trabajar, ¿verdad?
Por el oficio, ¿verdad? Que
es un compromiso, ¿verdad? Que
yeah, it's just a lot to do to maintain a family, especially when you have lots of kids. But anyway, we were able to train up women promoters and men, and then these people would take off and into the surrounding communities with with this message. And the idea would be we wouldn't send a group of promoters, we'd send two promoters to a village for a 6-month period, where they visit every 2 weeks for from planting till harvest. And the group would have to send us a letter with 15 names on it, agreeing that they would cover the lodging and the room and board for the two promoters for that 6 months. And that way we assured that we had the community itself was really wanting this. And we had a point where we had 35 communities that we were working in. And at that point we had a major difficulty. This was like in the mid 80s. And our program was flourishing. We had, our fifth year, we had 2,000 families that had received training. And we had this whole program called the University of the Countryside, La Universidad del Campo, where we had courses that were happening all the time on everything from, from how medicinal plants to how to study the Bible to, conservation of soil and water methods and making insecticides that are out of natural products, natural insecticides. And literacy classes and classes on human rights, and we had them all underneath this big mango tree. We had a whole amphitheater of kind of benches set up. And anyway, about that time, AID, Agency for International Development, they decided that they wanted to set up another project that was identical to what we were doing in our region. And they came in with 7 full-time government technicians who each had a G. And they started a program teaching the exact methods that we were teaching. But along with it, at the very same time, they started a campaign that we were communists and that all of our money came from Cuba and that all the promoters were carrying subversive literature and weapons. And and then they went around to the communities where we were the strongest and they did all kinds of damage. And I'll let Jorge tell a little bit about what happened to his community. Jorge, no sé si usted puede explicar qué pasó con la idea en Tenerito. ¿Cuántas gentes tenían en principio y qué pasó?
Sí. Digamos que para llegar a ser lo que somos nos ha costado demasiado.
To be able to get to the point that we are right now, it has cost us so much.
Tuvimos grandes barreras.
We had big barriers.
Problemas en contra de nosotros.
Many problems against us.
O sea que en Honduras se organizó una organización del gobierno llamado Recursos Naturales.
In Honduras, they organized a group called Natural Resources.
Que era financiada por AID.
It was financed by AID.
Después que Roberto llegó,
after Roberto
y que
came,
nosotros aprendimos,
and we learned all these things,
que comenzamos a entrenar a la gente,
we began to train people.
Ya iba la agencia de recursos. Patrocinada por AID y se metía.
Recursos Naturales, Natural Resources came in with all the support from AID and they got involved in our communities.
Y decía, no le hagan caso a esos.
And they said, don't pay any attention to any of those people.
Esos están dominados por un gringo.
They're all these 100 promoters are dominated by a gringo.
Ese gringo hay que echarlo fuera de Honduras.
This gringo, we have to cast out of Honduras.
Nosotros sí somos hondureños, sí.
We are Hondurans.
Sí, les vamos a ayudar.
And we will help you.
Teníamos grandes inversiones ahí. Por caso, yo tuve una aldea que se llama Terreritos, que habían como 60 personas.
We had a lot invested in these communities. I was visiting a community where I had 60 people participating.
Todas las clases, todo el entrenamiento.
I was giving all the training.
Comenzamos a trabajar.
We began working with the people.
Les ayudamos con piochas,
picks,
mangueras,
and, hoses,
palas,
and shovels,
bombas,
and a few backpack sprayers.
Y luego llegaron ellos y dijeron,
and then they came.
Nosotros les vamos a ayudar más.
And they said, we'll help you more.
Tapen esas acequias.
Cover up your ditches.
Arranquen esas barreras.
Get rid of your barriers.
Y nosotros les vamos a regalar.
And we will give you.
Hubo días que a mí me dijeron no queremos que ustedes nos asesoren.
And we were told, I was told by some of the people in the community, that we don't want you to come back and teach
una,
us.
Una institución que
we
es
have an institution that is millionaire.
Y que nos va a ayudar.
And they're going to help us.
Entonces, pues, Yo me fui decepcionado para la casa, para mi casa.
So I went back to my home.
Porque había trabajado mucho, mucho.
I worked a lot.
Pero ¿qué pasó?
What happened?
Y ahí me voy para otra comunidad.
I went to another community.
A enseñarle a los campesinos.
To teach the campesinos there.
Entonces van los mismos empleados del gobierno.
And the same government employees went to that place.
Abandonan los otros campesinos y se van.
They abandoned the other community where that they'd already destroyed.
Entonces,
and they went to this one.
Teníamos muchas dificultades.
So we had a lot of difficulties.
Pero al fin, ahí de, se llegó el plazo que ya el proyecto se terminó.
But finally the AID project ended, came to the end of its financing.
Los campesinos quedaron en ruinas.
And the peasants were in ruins.
En ruinas. Y los campesinos que fueron asesorados y se permanecieron firme con nosotros. Mm-hmm. Hoy pues se nota la diferencia. Ellos han tenido buena superación.
And we know now that the people that did benefit from our training, the training that we offered them, they were able to progress in spite of all this.
Uh-huh. Con respecto de Gracie y Roberto.
With respect to Bob and Gracie.
Yo he podido observar en ellos lo siguiente. Algo parecido como lo del Señor Jesús.
Oh, no.
En cierto sentido.
Se sufrieron
desprecios,
they suffered,
críticas,
criticisms,
y muchas otras cosas
and
más.
Many other things.
No fue muy fácil de primas a primeras, desde el principio, no fue muy fácil. Pero yo soy evangélico.
I'm an evangelical.
Y algo que me motivó Tierra Nueva es lo
siguiente,
que está basado en Isaías
65:17,
que dice,
it says,
los haré ver cielo nuevo y tierra nueva.
I'm creating a new heavens and a new earth.
Eso me motivó.
This motivated
y dije yo voy a estar en Tierra Nueva.
And I said, I will work
voy a apoyar
nueva.
Para colaborar con la humanidad.
With humanity.
Y fue así.
It was in this way.
No solo fue amenazas para él, sino que para nosotros
también. It wasn't just threats against him, it was also threats against us.
En cierta ocasión, un campesino solicitó a Recursos Naturales que le trazara una sequía.
There was an occasion where a peasant was asked to mark out a contour drainage ditch for one of the for him by the government.
Él no fue.
But the government worker didn't come.
Falló con la palabra el día, la fecha que puso, no llegó.
He didn't do what he said he was going to do and didn't come.
Entonces él vino donde mí,
so
y
he came
me
to
dijo,
me.
Quiero que por
so
favor me trace esa sequía.
Come and mark out my contour drainage ditch.
Y en eso llegó don Fernando,
and so Fernando
y fuimos a trazar.
Came and we all went and marked it out.
Y aquel hombre estaba sediento de trabajar con la sequía
and
y empezó
man was thirsty to work with
a trabajar.
His methods of contour farming.
¿Qué resultó ahí?
What happened there?
Que cuando vino el de Recursos Naturales,
when the government worker came,
vino a ofenderme a mí. Ese tal por cual de Miguel fue el que hizo tal cosa.
Blankety blank, he went and did some of this.
Le dijo al campesino,
yo
te tenía apuntado.
He said, I had you signed up.
Ah, el campesino le contestó, me apuntaste, pero no me pegaste.
He says, you wrote me up, but you didn't pegaste.
No me pegaste, le apuntó, pero no me pegó.
You didn't hit the target or something.
Entonces, los sufrimientos de tierra,
so
los de la familia Eblak no ha sido fácil.
The Eblak family,
de los promotores no ha sido fácil.
It has been easy for us as promoters.
Va tras de un proceso lento, pero
process,
positivo.
But positive.
Porque el asunto no solo es de que la familia cambie la mentalidad de cultivar la tierra, sino que su mente a través de la palabra de Dios. Comentamos, llevamos el mensaje espiritual y miramos algo para el estómago también. Porque muchas denominaciones religiosas solo llevan el mensaje espiritual, pero no miran lo material.
So anyway, we had this attack against us. I mean, there were rumors that all of these guys were communists and that all of our money was coming from Cuba and that we were, our meetings were subversive meetings, and at one point they tried to burn down our farm. You know, two different times they tried to burn down our farm in the middle of the night. And it got really to the point where we went from 2,000 families to about 500 families.
When AID came in and were saying those things about you, they told them to cover up the ditches and to not follow your ways. What did AID propose?
Well, then they wanted them to redo their ditches, and then they paid them a certain amount of chemical fertilizer for every meter of drainage ditch that they dug.
But the same ditch that you were
same
wanting to dig?
Same ditch that we dug, yeah.
Cover it up and dig it over.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And they didn't teach the people how to dig it. They just went and they marked it out themselves, and they did all that. They just said they treated them like they were workers. And they said, if you do this work, that we're marking out all the ditches. If you dig all the ditches, we'll pay you in fertilizer.
But if they dug the ditches before the people came, with your guidance, they wouldn't help them.
And they were able to. And then they marked down all the meters of ditches that they were able to do, they claimed to have done. And they were considered the most successful government program in the whole country. And then they were all given grants to go to Italy to study sunflower seeds. Really crazy. Anyway, the promoters were able to continue visiting communities where no cars could get to, because the agricultural workers for the government didn't want to go to where they couldn't drive to. And that's how we were able to survive. It's because the promoters would visit communities that were distant. The worst problems we had when we were united in classes.
Poniendo en práctica,
and we were putting into practice.
Que estábamos visitando los campesinos.
We were visiting the peasants.
Algunos que llegaban, ¿va?
There were some who came.
Mucha gente llegaba, pero
a lot of people came.
No sé, de parte de los mismos empleados de recursos decían que era dinero del comunismo.
Then the government workers said that the money that sustained all of us was from communism.
Y que él podía ser un guerrillero.
And that I was a guerrilla.
Roberto. Pero se fue mucha gente.
So lots of people stopped working.
Ahí llegaban.
People came from all different religions, and there were even employees from the government that came to our courses. All the people that were employees of the government, they stopped working with us for fear.
And
so we had to think of a new strategy. So we went to the military delegations. We invited them to send a commission to visit our meetings and to visit us in our fields. And so they were able to see that it wasn't like they were denouncing. Because there were lots of people that immigrated out of our ministry, or that left our ministry because of fear.
What do you think the government was afraid of?
¿Y por qué tenía miedo de nuestro ministerio? ¿Por qué tenía? ¿Cuál fue la amenaza?
Mire, el gobierno bien sabía que no era así, ¿verdad? Que no éramos guerrilleros.
The government knew we weren't guerrillas.
Pero lo que pasa que ellos sentían celos porque la institución de recursos naturales.
Because the government of institutions.
Su campo de trabajo. Era el mismito que nosotros.
Their work was the very same work that we were.
Ellos estaban disfrutando de millones y millones.
They were getting millions and millions of dollars.
Pero ellos antes de nosotros no hacían nada.
But before we came, they weren't doing anything.
Solo andaban en sus carros.
They just went driving around their cars.
Bueno, entonces nosotros no tomamos el campo que ellos tenían que hacer.
So we began to do the work that they were designated to do.
Y fue cuando ellos sintieron celo.
And that's when they felt jealous.
Y odio para nosotros.
And hatred towards us. Y ellos trataron a ustedes como campesinos, como que no tenían ningún conocimiento.
Ah, sí, decía.
And they said,
ellos qué saben si ellos no
saben. What are those campesinos? No, they don't know anything.
Son más tontos que ustedes.
They're stupider than any of you guys. So then they used the social class kind of division.
Yeah. Yo creo que hasta los mismos norteamericanos tenía crítica a ellos. En ese entonces funcionaba ahí un instituto evangélico.
Oh, mira, amiga, mejor no hablamos de eso porque no hay tiempo. Pero... Okay. So anyway, we're running out of time, unfortunately. We got about 5 more minutes. But anyway, this program was able to continue because people were organized into committees. This is Jorge's village and their agricultural committee, which now has probably twice as many members. But the whole idea of an agricultural committee was to be independent but organized, rather than dependent and organized, which is what the government did. The government organized lots of agricultural committees but made them totally dependent on all kinds of handouts and on the government worker who would come. Without the government worker, there was no reason to be organized. This is Jorge Mejia's village. Agricultural Committee, I don't know if he's there in that picture or not.
Barbón.
Oh, yeah. There he is.
Oh, there's
Jorge. And this is Fernando, who visited his village every 2 weeks. So once people were organized into committees, they could do all kinds of things. They could put in gravity flow water systems. And we raised lots of money from different congregations up here and put in about 15 or 20 different gravity flow water systems to villages. Oops. Oh, that's too bad. Ah.
Oh, wait.
Okay, that's an important picture.
You want to fix it?
Well,
I don't know if we have time.
We don't have time to fix it, actually. Why don't we turn the lights on, and I will just continue talking about the rest without the slides. That's for our last day. We're talking about Tierra Nueva del Norte, the new earth of the north. So anyway, one of the things that we got involved in right from the start, after about 3 years, was scripture study with people. And since we were working, teaching basic grain production, increasing, we were teaching something that everyone needed. We had everybody coming to our courses. We had the village murderer, we had people that were like the outlaws, and we had all the town drunks, and we had the evangelical pastors and the Catholic lay leaders, everybody came. But most of the people that came were people that were excluded from the church because of all the rules that most of the people couldn't live up to. In Latin America, yesterday we talked about how in Central America and many of the churches, both the Catholic and Protestant, have such strict rules and requirements to be able to enter into any kind of communion that most people are excluded. Well, we saw that. And at one time, Gracie and I and Fernando and Catalina, we as a group, we read the Bible every night of the week. We had a little study in our house. And it got dark, like at 5 o'clock. We'd fire up our Coleman lantern, and we had all this time. And so we had this study just on our own. And one day I was in a village, and one of these guys showed up with a big ivory-handled pistol. And one of the men said, "Hey, Roberto, that's Lisandro Guzman. And he's a known murderer. We're kind of worried about, him being here at this meeting." And so at that day, one of the other guys in the committee said, "Could we begin our course today with a Bible study?" I had never talked about the Bible, even once. I was one of these people that believed that, if people were going to ever make me be a missionary, they'd have to make me be a missionary. I didn't want to impose anything on anybody. I was to the extreme, probably. But anyway, they said, we know that you have Bible studies in your home, and you put God first, and we're so materialistic, we campesinos. Nosotros los campesinos somos tan materialistas. Solo hablamos de cómo está la milpa, cómo están los cerdos. He said, all we talk about is how's the cornfield, how's the beans, how's the pig, and we don't. God is not part of our discussion. God's not part of our life. Maybe if we put God first, we could be. If we Catholics, we'd be able to teach something to our children, and maybe that would make some of the rougher people that we are more gentle. And he was thinking about this Lisandro guy who was this known murderer, right? So at that day, I began a Bible study. I always carried this little kind of miniature Bible in my book bag. And I pulled it out, and I said, "Okay, well, let's look at this text." And when I took it out, I noticed people were pretty uncomfortable. And that's because in Central America, when you pull out a Bible, it's like pulling out a machine gun. People are used to the Bible being a weapon that wounds people and hurts them. And these guys, especially the guys that were outsiders to the church. But we developed an approach to reading the scripture with groups of people that just through trial and error that really took on and became very popular. And that approach was to not talk about what we're supposed to do. We would say, "We're making a rule. We're not going to talk about what the Bible is calling us to do.
First, inflict no guilt."
Because that's what divides us. Some of you think you shouldn't drink, smoke, dance, and have sleep around and do this or that. Others of you think you have to speak in tongues, and others of you think you have to be organized and united and be for liberation. And everyone has their agenda, right? But that's what divides us. So what we're going to talk about is who's God and what has God done. So this was our method, and we stuck to that I was like the, in the beginning, I was like the umpire or whatever that would make sure that we wouldn't get carried away arguing about what we were supposed to do. And it was really powerful to see the impact of that approach. You know, the town drunk sometimes would have something that just surprised all the evangelicals and the, kind of the serious Catholics, right? And the evangelical would have something that would shock the Catholics, and the Catholics that would shock the Protestants. And, you know, and anyway, we started these Bible study groups that pretty soon took off, and there were other committees that these men were visiting that wanted to study too. So then they began to ask for training in how to study the Bible. So that, after 3 years, that became one of my main focus, foci, is teaching people how to study the scriptures and teach the scriptures. And I had no formal training. I hadn't been to seminary. And, you know, Gracie and I, we had no seminary training. And so we were just doing it off of what we could study right there in the, you know, in the, right where we lived. And that's what led to us to eventually deciding to go to seminary. But it was that combination of scripture study and then, you know, working in these practical ways that really made the program, you know, really made it take off, and really, I think, is the reason why it has survived. ¿Verdad? Estoy diciendo que como empezamos a estudiar la palabra de Dios, pues Rocío está contando. And I'd like to invite you all to sing a song that we sing. It's a real common song, a really popular song in our program. It's called Liberemos a los Hombres, Liberate the People. I have it, the English in the in small letters, so you can know what we're singing here.
Cantemos todos los estrofos. Seguimos.
Si queremos.
left some flyers out for anyone that is interested in knowing more about the ministry. It's actually more focused on Tierra Nueva del Norte, but are there any questions? I think we have maybe one or two minutes.
I was thinking of amount of ownership of individual farmers as opposed to the ones that they are having to work for somebody.
La mayor parte de la gente tiene tierra o no tiene tierra.
Esa es una pregunta, una buena pregunta.
That's a very good question.
Sí, porque mucha gente recibió los cursos.
Many people received training.
La enseñanza completa.
The complete training.
Pero como no tenía la tierra donde trabajar.
But since they didn't have land to work on.
Fue en vano el trabajo.
It was in vain to work.
Esa gente siempre emigró.
These people always, they migrated.
Una para las ciudades de Honduras.
Some to cities.
Y otra para el norte.
Others to North America.
Aquí en Estados Unidos hay gente que recibió esa.
Here in the United States there are people enseñanza. That have received all this training. You had a question?
I was just wondering when you were talking about your system of controlling the prices, have you ever encountered any threats or any opposition from the rich?
¿Ustedes tenían problemas con los acaparadores cuando ustedes jugaban con ellos bajando los precios de la cooperativa?
Sí. Enemistades.
Yes, we had people that were enemies sí. with us.
Sí, muchos problemas.
A lot of problems.
Primero, ellos preguntaban.
First they asked,
¿cuándo van a vender ustedes?
When are you going to sell?
Decían, yo le compro todo ese maíz.
They say, I'll buy all that corn from you.
No.
We said, no.
No, no vamos a vender ahorita.
We're not going to sell now.
Ni libreado, ni
we're picado. Not going to sell by the pound or by the 100 pound.
Sorry. Entonces, decían ellos a vender.
So they started to sell.
Y ahí entonces decíamos nosotros a vender también.
And so then we began to sell too.
A un precio más bajo.
But at a lower price.
Respecto a la pregunta que hizo mi hermano allá, con respecto a la tierra,
as far as the land goes,
hubieron casos en que muchos campesinos que recibieron los cursos de conservación de suelos,
there were cases in which many people who received the training of conservation of soil and water,
trabajaban en tierras ajenas,
they worked in other people's lands,
tierras de hombres ricos,
land of rich people.
Y cuando ellos conservaron el suelo, que miraron la producción,
and when they conserved the soil and the rich people saw the production,
entonces los echaron fuera.
Then the rich people kicked them off the land. I think we're going to have to finish, actually. There's a meeting right now. Okay.